Hi everyone, welcome back to The Runoff. I'm Erica, here with my editor slash producer slash does like everything for me, Richie.
What's up?
How's it going, Richie? How you feeling these days?
I'm feeling amazing.
Okay.
The summer's here and pool parties are closed. So I'm just home chilling.
Sounds about right. Sounds about what everybody in America is going through.
People are at the beach. We get to go close to the water.
You get to. I probably won't. There's people with cooties out there.
So you're not going to the beach?
I don't know. I have to figure out. I'll probably go like all the way down where there's like nobody.
Okay.
And then just stay for like an hour and leave.
Yeah. Go like on 57th.
Away from the tourists. I feel like people who go out immediately are the same people who've just been out the whole time. Yeah. So they don't care. And so I feel like least trusting of those people.
Yeah.
So I feel like I want to wait a week to start going out, but at the same time, I feel like maybe there's a way that I can like do it and be just like super, super, super careful.
Yeah.
So yeah, maybe I'll just go all the way down at the end where there's no one and just keep my distance.
I actually want to go now before people actually stop being scared and start coming out for real, for real, for real. At least there's like a little bit of people
right now. I hear you,
right,
but I feel like those are the people like me who have been cautious. And so like I'm less afraid of them. You know, but I get both points. It's just like eventually you just let go and let God.
Yeah,
you just be like, Lord, I stay quarantined for
but,
like 3 months.
But salt water is good for you. It's cleansing. So if you do get it, you jump in the ocean and you be fine.
You just wash off the cooties. I don't know about that one, Richard. I don't know.
Anyways,
okay, so wait, I wanted to start off a little bit lighthearted. So I don't know. I'm not going to pretend like I have a million people listening. I have very few people listening right now. It's just like my friends and family. But some people might be wondering why last week I put out the BFF episode and not an episode about Black Lives Matter. So what happened was I actually wanted to do a Black Lives Matter episode. As an African-American woman, this is very important to me. But as an African-American woman, I have faced trauma with this issue my entire life. And so, you know, with the hurt and the anger that I felt, I literally stayed up till 7:30 in the morning researching a million different things about systemic racism and was really going to go in on explaining it and in how to make it different and voting and like what to do. And coming from the place of hurt and anger that I was in, I just couldn't articulate it the way that I wanted to. I just feel like there's so many other outlets and so many other really smart, intelligent people who have made careers of trying to explain this. They can say it so much better than I can. And so instead of being another noise out there blocking you from the people who can actually make a difference and tell you what to do and explain it eloquently, I've decided to not discuss that in the way that I wanted to. I was actually on the phone with a friend and I was talking about how we call 911 for like literally just things that we can't handle, because if we tried, we could possibly break the law, right? Like if somebody breaks into your house in Florida, we have the stand your ground law. You can shoot them. Yeah. I have read articles where 50% of people who own guns die by their own gun. So that makes me reluctant to purchase a gun and have it in my house. So you could say, I'm not going to call the police. I'll just shoot them, right? And then call the police. Or you could be like me and barricade yourself and lock yourself in your room with mace and knives and be like, I'll just call the police if something happens. Yeah. So.
But you're dangerous with a knife, though. I wouldn't mess with you.
Hey. Don't volunteer people to challenge me. So what I was actually saying to my friend is there's been so many situations where we call the cops for situations that you may not want a man or a woman who is trained to deal with aggression and carrying a gun and a taser and a baton. Those may not be the people that you want to call, but in certain situations, you feel like those are the people you call. Like you want someone to come quickly, you call 911. And then, you know, based on what your issue is, they'll either give you EMTs or the police department. Sometimes they give you all of the above, right? You've been to plenty of situations where someone maybe passed out and the police come, the ambulance come, the fire department comes, like everybody comes. But sometimes you just don't necessarily want someone with a gun to show up. And you, we've heard different situations where like a kid was acting up in school and then they show you like a 6-year-old in handcuffs. And it's like, wow, really? That's how you felt you needed to handle that situation? You put a 6-year-old in handcuffs? And then you hear more like, okay, well, the adults in the situation aren't allowed to touch the child because then the parents can sue and say like you physically assaulted their child. But isn't there somebody else besides a man with a gun who can come? And I was saying to my friend, what if you called 911, right? And instead of using the city's resources by sending out 3 different departments, what if they had like an SUV or like some kind of minivan or something where 3 people that you would need would be in that one car? And I said, the reason why I think that would work is because when the boys in blue come, they got each other's back, right? Blue Lives Matter or whatever that bullshit is they say. So you could say, what if they had... what if they had some type of EMT and a social worker? That way, if it's like a woman who calls in distress, right? And she calls the police because her husband's beating her. But when you get there, you realize that the dude is actually having a manic episode. And she says to you, he's never, ever been abusive. I noticed he's out of his medication. We haven't been able to afford for him to get any more. And he didn't actually mean to hit me. He's in a manic episode. That's when the social worker can come, right? The EMT can take care of the woman. The social worker can calm the man down. You know, situation averted. Now you bring him to the mental health office. But if he's going crazy and he looks out of his mind, a police officer might think he's like an abusive drug addict. Things get out of control. This is how people get shot. So I thought, what an amazing idea if it would be those 3 people. Lo and behold, the notification banner pops up on the top of my phone and it's NBC News, an article by John Shoup, I hope I'm saying his name right, S-C-H-U-P-P-E, entitled, "What Would It Mean to Defund the Police? These Cities Offer Ideas." So I'm going to do something, and it may come off a little lazy, but I'm literally going to read this article verbatim because I started highlighting all of the things that I wanted to say and what I wanted to say about them, and like the whole thing was bright yellow. So yeah. I'm literally just going to read this verbatim and then just kind of give you my insight on what I was thinking about it and why I had these ideas, because basically it's literally the idea that I had mentioned to my friend, which I'm sure, you know, many Americans share the same idea because it's enough that these cities took part. So here we go. What would it mean to defund the police? These Cities Offer Ideas, by John Shoup. In 2017, when a shortage of inpatient psychiatric beds in Dallas was driving up the number of 911 calls, overwhelming emergency rooms and crowding jails with mentally ill people, the city decided to try something different. It put an officer, a paramedic, and a social worker in every car responding to mental health calls in the city's troubled South Central region, an attempt to get people the help they needed without an arrest or violent confrontation. The pilot program, Right Care, led to a drop in arrests in the area. Right Care is one of several programs across the country drawing the attention of activists seeking to end law enforcement's systemic abuse of Black Americans. In the aftermath of George Floyd's death at the hands of Minneapolis police last month, protesters in many cities have said they are fed up with trying to change police behavior and are instead advancing a more radical idea: to defund the police by cutting their budgets and offloading police functions to other municipal departments or community groups. Taken literally, calls to defund police departments conjure images of empty precinct stations and the proliferation of citizen patrols. But if the ideas behind the movement take hold, their implementation may look less like the Minneapolis City Council's vote to disband its police department and instead resemble more moderate experiments already underway in cities and towns around the country. That includes projects like Right Care that don't reject police or seek to take away their entire budget, but rather aim to decrease their role in situations that are not dangerous while allowing medical and social service workers to take the lead. And I thought that was genius. I remember a time when I lived in Boston and there was a homeless man outside of my friend's apartment, and he had a basement apartment. So he was outside just screaming at the top of their lungs. It was awful. It really made me want to cry. I didn't know what his situation was or what was going on, but I peeked out the window and it was very clearly a homeless man. And I don't know if most people know, but like 80% or something like that of homeless people are mentally ill. And so whenever I see someone in that situation, my first reaction is they need help. You know, my friends, however, were alarmed. We were up all night watching movie and playing games. And so I know it was really late, probably like 2-3 o'clock in the morning or something. And it made them alarm to go to bed because he was right by their bedroom windows. And like I said, it was a basement apartment. So the window was on the ground right where he was screaming. And they wanted to call the police. And I immediately was like, let me call the homeless shelters. Maybe they send a van, maybe something like that. Like, I didn't want someone with a gun to come take care of this man who was obviously in distress. And so I'll tell you what happened when I called the shelter. They said, our beds are filled. He might be in distress. Maybe call the police. Even if they have to leave him in a cell for the night, he'll be safer there. And I thought, how sad is that? Not only did we not have the funds to acquire enough beds for the homeless, but even they were saying just call the police because there was nothing in the middle. There was no one else to call. And so I think decreasing the police doesn't just mean not having anybody's involvement at all or their involvement at all. What it means is to take money from them and put it towards things that they are, honestly, even the police are being overworked, really. Because think about the training if you want to go protect and serve and protect your community, and now you have to deal with crazy old homeless people. Like, they're being stretched so thin. There does need to be other people that are sent out when you call 911 besides a man with a gun.
And I wouldn't think they get trained to handle those type of mentally ill people. Like, it's not part of their training to, like, how do you disarm a mentally stressed person? Yeah. Like, I don't think it's part of their, they're looking for criminals.
Yeah.
So they're going to handle him, like, probably as a criminal.
And that's the thing. I think they have very minimal training in that area. But what you're going to do when you're in situations dealing with criminals every day, right? You're going to resort to your normal mentality.
Yeah.
Because you have this minimal training and then this massive training. So, and I'm not speaking for everybody. I know somebody's going to be like, I have an uncle who's a cop and he loves all the homeless people in his neighborhood. I'm sure you have social service people who are equipped to handle this. Their literal dream was to go to school for these situations. So I just think this is an amazing idea and it's super important. So we're going to go into how it's working. Back to the article. There is no magic switch to turn off and boom, there's no police department, said Alex Vital, a sociology professor at Brooklyn College, whose 2017 book, The End of Policing, has become a manifesto for protesters and police reform advocates. People are trying to figure out what kind of society would be possible that doesn't rely on police and prisons to solve its problems. And that's a long-term political vision that is important to this movement. But if you look at what people are doing on the ground, it's taking money for gang enforcement and spending it on after-school programs and youth counselors. It's about going to budget hearings and lobbying city council members and holding town meetings and neighborhood centers. And I want to touch on that for a minute as well. So the other day I was randomly checking emails and there was this email, where was it from? It was from the Public Safety and Rehabilitation Committee. And they were basically talking about an item that they put forth to create more transparency in the police department. And I'm going to get into that more when I'm done talking about this article. But I think, not I think, a lot of people just vote for the president and call it a day. And if you look at what your city is doing locally, I know that sometimes when I tell people like things that the, you know, city commissioners or whatever, the things that they handle, people think it's like the governor that does it. And it's like, it's you guys, I know it's being stressed to vote more and more, but you have no idea the things that your city actually has in place that you can actually go to these meetings. It's not even just about trying to just vote uninformedly. Like, you can literally sit in these meetings. And the meeting that I sat in on, they said, oh, this meeting is usually like 8 minutes max. And the meeting was 2.5 hours, maybe a little bit more. Why? Because it is law to let everybody who signed on speak. And everybody got 2 minutes. And it was over 100 people. Law. It is law to let them speak. So an 8 minute meeting went over 2.5 hours. Actually, was it closer to 3? It started at 9:30, and I remember looking at the time at 11:30, and it wasn't over yet. So it was over 2.5 hours. And you don't understand the power. It's not about people just telling you you have power to vote. You literally have power. You know, some of the chair people had other places they had to be. They had things they had to do. One of the chairwomen left and came back because she had a phone meeting and she didn't realize over 100 people were going to talk. So she literally made the meeting for like 30 minutes after the call started and had to go and come back. And it was still going on. So I just want people to understand that what I'm reading right now, you literally have power in. This isn't a board that sat down and did whatever they wanted. You have the power to make this happen in your city. You literally do. You can go to these meetings and say, this is what happened in this city and it's working and I want it. You can literally walk up to a microphone and get your 2 minutes and do that. And back to the article. Driving this effort is a realization that police use of deadly force against Black people has not abated in the 6 years since a string of killings of Black men by police ignited a national call for more police training and accountability. Instead of trying to change things from within, a process that funneled more resources to police departments, the defund movement calls for reducing communities' reliance on police for a number of services: monitoring the homeless, resolving domestic quarrels, disciplining students, responding to outbursts by people with mental illness, swarming neighborhoods to tamp down violence, and responding to minor complaints like someone trying to pass a counterfeit $20 bill, the accusation that triggered the police call that ended in Floyd's death. And this is what I was trying to say about the police being spread thin. You know, in no way, shape, or form should someone with a gun and a taser be disciplining students. Just no. Most kids I know would probably just shut down at the mere terrifying appearance of a cop showing up when they're 6 years old acting up in school. A man with a gun and a badge should not be dealing with someone who tried to use a $20 counterfeit bill. I mean, I feel like by now we've all seen that tweet where the guy's like, I tried to do the same thing. It's a funny story that I tell at house parties, dinner parties, and this man died. So that just goes to show you what can happen and how things can escalate with someone who has a gun. And although I know that the police officer in Floyd's situation did not use a gun, what I'm going back to is the mentality of someone whose job is to be aggressive. Really, because the reason why when somebody's trying to kill you, you call the police, you want that aggressive behavior. You want someone who's not afraid to come and protect you and defend you against a rapist or a murderer or someone with a knife or who's breaking into your home. You literally are calling the police for them to be that. But then you have to call them for things like this 6-year-old is unruly or somebody's trying to use a $20 bill that I don't believe is real, or there's a mentally ill man in the alley and he's screaming and I'm kind of afraid he might kick in my window because he's mad. Like, that's not, that aggression is not who you want to call. That's not who you want to call. And you can call them in the hopes that they're going to be kind and polite and respectful, but that's not really what they're trained to do in all realness. And honestly, with systemic racism being so prevalent in this country, everybody of every department is going to have some racial bias, right? Everyone of every department. And so why would you risk that with someone with a gun? Back to the article. That work, advocates say, could be better done by outreach workers, social workers, and community workers trained to de-escalate street feuds. That could be paid for by diverting money from police budgets to municipal programs that deal with underlying causes of crime, including poverty, inadequate housing, and poor education. When we talk about defunding the police, what we're saying is invest in the resources that our communities need. Black Lives Matter co-founder Alicia Garza told NBC News Meet the Press, "So much of policing right now is generated and directed towards quality of life issues, homelessness, drug addiction, domestic violence, but what we do need is increased funding for housing. We need increased funding for education. We need increased funding for quality of life of communities who are over-policed and over-surveilled." And that issue is so real about being over-surveilled. You have to remember, yes, when you are in the hood, there is often crime. We're going to be real. We're going to be honest. It happens. As someone who came from that type of setting, guess what I also had? I had people in my apartment building when my godfather forgot to pick me up from school and I was in like kindergarten. I buzzed on a bunch of bells and a bunch of people came to my rescue. Usually a neighbor on the floor right above me, she had a daughter that I played with. Normally she would help me out, but I think she was out running errands or something. So there was another woman in the building. And she looked out and said, "Erica, is that you?" And I said, "Yeah, I don't know where my mom is." She said, "Come on in." She kept me all night. All night. My mom worked overnight. My godfather was supposed to pick me up and drop me off at my nana's. He forgot. He went to a Celtics game. That's another story for another day. But so the lady kept me. She kept me so long that the nightly news almost put my picture up as an Amber Alert. But again, that's another story. What I'm saying is, when I say over-surveilled, is there are good people in these neighborhoods who are often attacked. Because the people watching these neighborhoods are like, there's crime there. I'm going to watch this area. Everybody there is bad. And it puts good people in bad situations. Everybody doesn't want to live in the hood because that's where the best crack is sold. They live there because they don't have money to live somewhere else. They don't have money to do better. You know, the elderly woman who took me in that day, her daughter had a child, three generations, in one, a two-bedroom or one-bedroom? In one one-bedroom apartment, three generations. And why did her daughter live there with her child? Because she was putting herself through school. And that woman, do you know why, when they knocked on her door to see if I was there, do you know why they didn't know she was there? Because she went to midnight service, churchgoer. These are the kind of people who are in these communities that are being overly surveilled. They're good people who are targeted based on race and poverty discrimination. And they don't need to be watched every single second of the day. Does there need to be some kind of watch? Yes. Because you don't want something to go down at 3 a.m. and the cops take 3 hours to get there like they used to back in the 80s when I was growing up there, or the early 90s. You don't want that. So of course you want some police, but you don't need a ton of police doing stop and frisk and all this other stuff. It takes away from tax dollars and it targets people who don't deserve it, which does what? Make you not trust the police and make you run when you see them as if you're guilty when you're not. Back to the article. Some cities have responded with gestures of support. New York Mayor Bill de Blasio has pledged to shift money from the NYPD budget to youth and social services programs. And real quick about de Blasio, I saw an interview with him and his wife about how his daughter was arrested at the protest. And he was completely livid that the New York Police Department, that one of the officers actually released personal information. And that's how the media found out that she was even arrested. That's how the word got out about what happened to her. And he was really upset because he knows that she was targeted because of him. She was arrested and held and had her personal information let out because they knew who her father was. And that just goes to show you how hard it's going to be to work with these police departments and why we can no longer ask for reform, reform, reform. We have to dismantle and defund. And the reason why, and when I say dismantle, I don't mean completely get rid of the cops. I mean, they don't need as much of the budget as they get, and they don't need to be as large as they are, because we need these other departments to be doing the things that we're asking them to do. But this is why we can't do the reform, because this is how they behave, right? Because they know that everybody's not feeling them right now. And so this is the kind of evil tactics that they use against mayors who want to make their cities better. If you are someone who is supposed to protect and serve, wouldn't you want the communities to do better and not need you to an extent? Obviously, you want to keep your job, but wouldn't you want for them to not need you for every little thing all of the time if you're actually protecting your city? Back to the article. Los Angeles Mayor Eric Garcetti has vowed to pull $150 million from the LAPD to boost funding for healthcare, jobs, and peace centers, which critics noted was a small drop in the department's $1.8 billion budget. You want them to do more, but you just hope that maybe when they see it successful, then the next year they'll take out even more from the budget. But I'll get back to that. Portland, Oregon has agreed to pull police from public schools. Several Minneapolis institutions, including the public school district, the University of Minnesota, and the Park and Recreation Board, have moved to curtail or end their contracts with city police, which means no more, Amy Cooper, who called the police because she was in the park and said this man was bothering her. Yeah. He actually would have been able to call the Park and Recreation Board and been like, she has an unleashed dog in the park where I'm trying to watch birds. Which is more so what the park is for than to have your unleashed dog. But anywho, I digress. Law enforcement officials have said cutting police budgets could cause a dangerous uptick in crime and police abuses. Attorney General William Barr has warned of vigilantism and more killings. President Donald Trump has threatened to use the movement against Democrats. Former Vice President Joe Biden, who was running against Trump, also came out against defunding police. I think what people hear when they hear defunding police is not giving them the adequate amount of money to do their jobs. I think what people are missing is that when you take away money from them, right, they don't need it as much if a social worker is going to take that call instead of them. Nobody wants people who are here to protect and serve to not be adequately funded. But if they're not going to be answering calls for the other numerous things that I named, and other people are going to be going to those calls instead, then you would then take that money and give it to them instead of the police. It's not like you're grounded and now you don't get your allowance. We still want you to have the money that you need. You're just going to need to do less so you won't need as much money. And I think that's the thing, because this is so early on in the conversation, that that's some of the things that people are missing. And so the movement will likely remain a local issue, playing out in municipal budget battles and emulating programs like Right Care in Dallas. And that's what I'm trying to tell you guys right there. A local issue playing out in municipal budget battles. That is the meeting that I was a part of. That is why. And honestly, when I first read that, I was scared, because I'm like, if the above people are against it, what the heck are we going to do? But guess what? They ain't really got anything to do with it. This is city level stuff. Your police department's budget is city level. I mean, maybe your governor will, it'll go higher and you'll have to fight that guy too. But you don't need the president to agree with you. This is local issue stuff. The police department doesn't get their budget from the president and Congress. They get it locally. And this is why your local votes and your local voice is so important, because this is what is affecting you directly the most. Right Care was funded by a $3 million grant from a local foundation in response to the overwhelming demand of emergency mental health calls, not only on hospitals, but also police. As in many departments around the country, officers in Dallas had come under scrutiny for using deadly force on Black residents, including those suffering from emotional breakdowns. David Brown, who served as police chief from 2010 to 2016, was criticized for saying the officers who shot a schizophrenic man holding a screwdriver in 2014 followed department rules. That is why departments should not be dealing with this, because they have fucked up rules. Brown later said publicly that police should not be responding to most mental health calls, which is part of the reason Dallas police agreed to become part of Right Care. So the same guy who said they followed the protocol is saying we shouldn't even be dealing with these calls. He agrees, you know, people who aren't supposed to deal with things are going to have the wrong rules in place. It's just like, and this may seem like a stretch, slavery at one point was legal. So we can hate the slave catchers, but guess what? They were obeying the law. They were catching people who were illegally running away. So you have to remember that just because rules are in place and people are following them doesn't mean they're the right rules. You know, we can vilify this man for saying that he followed the protocol, but guess what? It was the protocol. And that is why he's saying, even I don't agree that we should be dealing with these issues. Look at the effed up rules we have in place. Since the program began in early 2018, arrests and ambulance calls for people experiencing mental health troubles have declined in the South Central region of Dallas where the program operates, which has freed up officers to deal with other calls, officials said. If that's not proof enough, I mean, come on. Police involvement is still very important to this program, said Curtis Young, director of social work at Parkland Health and Hospital System, which provides social workers to the program. It's not taking away something or defunding police. It's adding a service to the community. Why? Because they're not actually defunding the police. It's under that program. So the money's just being redirected, which when we say defund the police is really what we're saying. It's just to redirect the funds. Another example cited by advocates is Building Healthy Communities, a project in Salinas, California, where fatal shootings by police, including four in 2014, frayed public trust and led to an array of internal reform efforts aimed at correcting deficiencies identified in a 2015 Justice Department review of the department. The police killing of a young mother in 2019 raised new protests. With that backdrop, Building Healthy Communities has successfully fought an increase in school police officers in elementary schools and lobby cities leaders to prioritize social services and economic development over expanded police budgets. And I just want to add, Building Healthy Communities is the name of the program. Lead organizer Jesus Valenzuela said their work is similar in spirit to the defund the police movement, but they are careful not to use those words because they want to work with police and avoid being demonized by people who support law enforcement. I just want to concentrate on that for a second. He's saying it really is defunding the police, but they're so afraid of the police department and so afraid of them not wanting to work to actually better the community and do what this program is called, Build Healthy Communities, that they don't even want to say that, even though that's what it's doing. That sounds like the local gang to me. That's how you treat the local gang. You know, we do want to create a community center, but we don't want to talk about the fact that we're doing it to keep kids from going to gangs because then the gangs might attack us. That's what it sounds like to me. We want to do what's best for the community, but we're afraid the people who are here to protect and serve it will be mad at us. That sounds like the type of program that needs to be dismantled. I'm sorry. Police do not need that kind of funding if they're here to protect and serve, and the people who are building healthy communities are afraid of them. wrong on so many levels. Our message is not explicitly defund the police, but we do want money to come from the budget, Valenzuela said. The moment we say defund the police, the reaction is to make us look like we are anti-police. We become proud of the pro and anti-police narrative. So they're pro-police because they want the police to work with them, but they don't want to sound like they're anti-police because then the police won't work with them. I mean, this sounds like immature school shit, but anywho. In Milwaukee, where neighborhoods erupted in unrest following the fatal police shooting of a black man in 2016, police have also enacted a series of reforms regarding use of force. In addition, the city created an Office of Violence Prevention in 2008 and expanded it in 2016. The office is under the health department, where it uses public health strategies rather than just police enforcement to reduce shootings and other serious crimes. The office helped residents develop a blueprint for peace that outlines community-driven solutions to violence, including methods to interrupt conflicts and retaliatory gun attacks, increase investment in youth programs, and improve health care, family resources and employment opportunities in vulnerable neighborhoods. That approach tries to correct imbalances in funding between those services and police operations and is similar in spirit to the strategy advocated by defund the police proponents. But the Milwaukee plan is envisioned as complementing police work, not cutting it out. We don't look at this as an either-or proposition, Reggie Moore, the office's director, said. Advocates have also pointed to a Eugene, Oregon program that dispatches medics and crisis workers on calls for help that don't necessarily require police, and the Health Alliance for Violence Intervention, a network of hospital-based programs that try to break cycles of violence by helping victims get better health care and social services. And honestly, that's the thing right there. These things get worse when things aren't handled initially. You know, kids are dropping out of school because of the education, and what happens? They join gangs, they end up on the street. You know, someone loses their job. If there aren't programs to help them get back into career works, what do? They sell drugs. They might, you know, end up being depressed, do drugs themselves, not just sell it, but do it. Become depressed, you know, maybe they have health insurance through their job. They get fired because of, you know, depression isn't helping them operate properly, and then they don't have their medication, and then they get manic out in the street, and then they get shot. Like, all of these issues are what leads to more police. And if you fix them, then you need less police, which means less funding. If you have less funding to them, then it can go to these other things, plain and simple. Even in Minneapolis, city council members who voted to dismantle the police department said they will take an incremental approach. That will start with an effort to redirect funds from the police to other programs, including the city's own violence prevention office. That might become part of whatever the city's new public safety system looks like, several council members said in an online panel hosted by The Appeal, a journalism website that focuses on criminal justice reform. We're talking about abolishing a field police structure that doesn't keep us safe, Councilmember Jeremiah Ellison said. He also said that the replacement would include a system that responds to violent crime. David Kennedy, director of the National Network for Safe Communities at John Jay College of Criminal Justice in New York City, which works with police and community leaders to disrupt gun violence, said he's watched the defund movement evolve from an advocacy aspiration to political reality almost overnight. The challenge, he added, was that almost all of the details still need to be worked out. And that's the thing. That's the end of the article, but that's the thing right there. These kind of things aren't going to happen overnight, which is also why we can't stop fighting, which is also why we can't pretend that the protest is where it ends. We have to continue to hold people responsible. We have to continue to be aware. We have to continue to have relevant voices. We cannot. What I will tell you is, when I was on this call for public safety and rehabilitation committee that I listened to the other day, I found out that I think it was 1/3 of a $2.2 billion fund goes to the police. And I just thought, living here in Miami Beach, there's so many other things that money can go towards. Like I said, 80% of the homeless is usually mentally ill. If you lived in Boston in the 80s and 90s and saw how bad the homeless population was, I'm sorry, I've only lived in two places. I don't really know where else to compare it to. It was horrific. It was so bad. It was so bad. It was a disaster. It's been cleaned up quite a bit. I'm not going to pretend like there's no homeless people. But the last time I was home, I remember it wasn't nearly as bad as what I used to see. And in Miami, it's the worst I've ever seen. It's horrific. It's so awful. There's homeless people everywhere. Everywhere. And all people are doing is telling them to move and to leave. No one's giving them a place to go. No one is helping these people. And it's really sad. Because I've seen homeless people in 102 degree heat sitting on the sidewalk minding their business. And a cop car pulls up. Two people get out. Just to tell the person they have to leave.
You know, it's crazy that when I was living downtown, there was homeless people downtown because of Bayside and all the tourist stuff there. So a lot of homeless people. But it was crazy how there was no homeless people in the financial district. In Brickell, there was none.
Literally, he's talking blocks.
Yeah.
Blocks away. This isn't another
city. This is a bridge, tiny bridge that separates Brickell and downtown, and over that little bridge there are, because that's where all the financial businesses are,
and they don't let them
even go there.
They wouldn't even bother to go over there because the police will be on you immediately. Yeah. And it's just like, where are the programs?
Yeah.
If that squad car didn't have to get called to move that man, every time you call the police, that's tax dollars. Every time. Think about all the businesses, all of the times they called to just make sure those people no longer cross that bridge. What if you took all that money and built a shelter where they could go?
Yeah.
Anybody who's ever been to American Airlines Arena to see any concert or game can tell you there are blocks with tents. Tents. Blankets. Boxes, bodies laying in the streets, on the sidewalks, out in the open, not tucked away somewhere, literally laying on a sidewalk to where you have to walk in the street to walk around them. It is the saddest thing. And in a tourist place like Miami, you are not going to sit here and tell me that this place does not make enough money to do something about this problem. You're going to tell me. This woman said, when I was listening to the meeting, she said, oh, you guys are sitting here and talking about our police. Miami police is the best police I've ever seen in my life. And this is an old woman. Our jail population is down 40%. We have the lowest juvenile arrests, lowest mental health arrests. Mind you, I think she's saying in Florida, which ain't saying shit, because we all know what kind of mess Florida is. But if you're telling me that all of that is true, why does the police department need 1/3 of the entire budget? I'll give you a little hint. The same woman said, I voted to give the police department newer AKs, more guns, because I didn't want them to be outmatched on the street. So you're telling me that all of these arrests are down, but you needed to fund them with war level guns because you think that the few gangsters and thugs and people who are making trouble, the few who are left are carrying around AKs. And this is the problem that people have with the amount of money that the police departments are getting. It is unnecessary. It is unnecessary. And I will tell you something that a friend of mine said to me when 9/11 happened, and I called him because I was so terrified that he was going to have to go to war. He said to me, I finally get to use my training. And that is what some of these police officers who get brand new AKs feel. Finally get to use that training. Is that the training that you want somebody to have when your uncle, who is out of his medicine for his schizophrenia, goes manic? Is that the kind of training that you want somebody to come with? We need to vote. We need to be aware. We need to do better so that the money that we give them, our tax dollars, go to the right place. I hope you guys learned something today. I hope you got something out of this. And thank you for listening to The Runoff. Protect your energy.